ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello, my name is Nij, and I host Imagine This, a science podcast for curious kids and their grown-ups about the questions you've probably always pondered but never actually known the whole answer to. Like, how do magnets push and pull? Why is dew on everything in the morning? And how does sunscreen actually work? Find Imagine This on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So I've just popped into the supermarket after work and I'm immediately surrounded by piles of fruit and vegetables, most of which is covered in plastic of some kind. So there's the cucumbers, which are wrapped in plastic. These mangoes, there's four in a pack, in a plastic bag. And not to mention the packaging all up and down the aisle shelves. Look, I know that this is a familiar sight for many Australians, but with ever-increasing amounts of plastic being churned out each year and ending up in landfill or waterways, is there a better, more environmentally friendly alternative? Hi, I'm Belinda Smith, and you're listening to Lab Notes, the ABC Radio National show that dissects the science behind new discoveries and current events. To explain if there might one day be an alternative to this plastic covering my cucumber is Eddie Attenborough, a chemical engineer and chemist at Monash University. Why do I see plastic all over everything at the supermarket?
Plastics are very good at stopping water, or we might add them to different materials to add freshness to a product. So these are a lot of plastics provide us with barrier properties where we can stop oxygen transfer as well as other gas transfers into a product, which might give us more freshness in our product.
Is that the cucumber situation?
Cucumber situation is a great one. The other one is your steak that you get at the supermarket. That plastic that's covering that steak is actually not just one plastic, it's multi-layered different plastics. Huh. And we have it there to stop all of those different gases passing through to keep your steak as fresh as possible. So it really is a massive part of our everyday lives.
Now, when that soft plastic's finished its job of keeping my cucumber fresh and crisp, it will most likely end up in landfill. Some of it might be incinerated or end up in waterways or the ocean where it breaks down into microplastics, but very, very little is recycled or composted. The thing is, we'll always need plastic, but there are new options being developed.
There's been a bit of work in the last 50 years towards something called bioplastics. But bioplastics isn't one thing. A bioplastic can be bio-based, so that means it's based from a renewable resource. So something like polyethylene, which we would usually get from fossil fuels, you can also make it from things like sugarcane. So you can make it bio-based, and we might call that a bioplastic. But bioplastic also has the connotation of biodegradable. So our plastic will biodegrade, it'll degrade in the environment, and it'll do so in a certain amount of time. A lot of the time, people talk about a 90% reduction in the plastic in 180 days. So because of that 180 days, it allows most of the material to degrade. And the material needs to be degraded by a microorganism. So, for example, bacteria, and in some cases, some companies are looking at insects as well. So how could they degrade the plastic? And so the research that has looked in this space now has really focused on what materials could we substitute for the current petroleum-based plastics that are both bio-based and biodegradable. One is great, but you really want both of those things if you can.
You made a bioplastic recently. Can you tell me about that?
This work has been done for about 60 to 70 years now. This discovery happened around the 1900s, where they realized that some bacteria were actually accumulating a inclusion body. So this kind of small little body of material, and they actually found that this was a plastic inside the bacteria. And under periods of stress conditions, the bacteria would start producing more of this plastic material. And there was only certain bacteria that were able to do this. And this sparked a world of investigation in the last 70 or so years. And so our work is really building off the knowledge and experience in this space. But what we've worked on here is just like myself or you, Belinda, maybe if you eat too much fat or sugar, you'll start accumulating fat in your body. What we found is that these bacteria with these nutrients, when they have too much sugar or too much fats, they will start accumulating this biopolymer inside their body. And they can accumulate this to a really high level, so almost 90% of their cell weight can accumulate this biopolymer. And it's seen as kind of a stress resource, so where it stores its carbon source it might need for the future. So what we've done in our work is we've looked at two different bacteria. And depending on the bacteria you choose, you can feed them different sugars, and they will accumulate polymers with different chain lengths. And the different lengths of the chemical chain will change the properties of the polymer. And it goes from a very stiff polypropylene-like polymer, so something like your drink bottle that you might get, and then it can go all the way to a very soft, stretchy, gooey material depending on the chain of that polymer. And so by growing up these two species of bacteria, we actually then extracted the polymer out, we blended them together at different ratios, and we made very thin films. So about 20 micron thick is what we use for a palette film or a cling film, and we then use this to compare what the film properties were with the different blends of the polymer.
So what you feed the bacterium dictates what it makes inside it.
Absolutely. It's really interesting.
Right.
Yeah, it's got very clever industrial pathways in the bacteria that decide then what kind of random polymer it creates.
How interesting. And so, yeah, so it takes the sugars and the fats and then through its own little chemical synthesis process inside it produces what is ostensibly a plastic.
Exactly. Really interesting.
And then you can just kind of, I suppose, do you have to destroy the bacterium to get the plastic out?
Yes, this is a good point. It's not like a yeast that can produce ethanol outside the cell. It produces it inside. So what we have to do is take it, break open the cell and extract it out. So, yeah.
Okay, well, RIP bacterium.
Yeah.
So you've got all these thin films. How do they compare to your cling film that you might buy at the supermarket?
If we want to make a stretchy plastic, more work needs to be done on creating a more stretchable material. It wasn't as stretchy as it would need to be for something like a cling film. And also more work needs to go on barrier properties. So though this material is good, it's very hydrophobic. So water really doesn't like it, which is great for a plastic polymer we might use on our food. What we need to do is have a look at more oxygen permeability, UV, and see how these different things pass through the film and therefore how we could use it.
How does it go breaking down in a compost heap?
Well, this is the really exciting part. So these plastics, they're natural plastics. So part of this is some papers have come out in the last 20 years really exploring this space. So not only are these polymers fully home compostable, and when I say fully, it's not into micro and nanoplastics. Most microorganisms in compost environments have the chemical pathways to eat that plastic up. So it can fully synthesize and degrade and use that as an energy source, which is really exciting. But there's also another segment there that not enough people talk about, and that's marine biodegradable. They fully degrade in the oceans, which is fantastic. So already these are the big wins of these polymers versus most other bioplastics and plastics in themselves.
Yeah, I've seen a bit of research in this space. Recently, there was a Japanese plastic that breaks down in seawater within a matter of days.
That's great. Wow.
It's amazing, yeah. Mm. So, I mean, you haven't made a bunch and you're not wrapping your sandwiches in it just yet.
Look, we would like to see that. That's where we want to see it going. There's a lot of work in this space, so growing bacteria, we know how to do it. Unfortunately, it's quite a smelly thing to do, but we know how to make biorefineries. So the next step is how we can take a waste source. So instead of using a sugar that you and me would like to eat, let's take a waste material that no one wants to eat, feed it to the bacteria and make the polymer.
And what sort of sources could you use for those sugars?
A great one would be waste from sugarcane. So Queensland has a lot of sugarcane waste, so that could be an easy win. The other one could be waste fruit and vegetables. But we can also use carbohydrates, and some more work we've been doing is looking at things like potato waste. And then a whole other aspect and a bunch of work going into this area as well is on fats. So looking at oils and waste oil. Used cooking oil is a great example, or coffee oil. There's some great work, especially in Europe, looking at waste coffee oil. The last kind of push at the moment, and this is the most interesting, is on carbon dioxide. So these bacteria can take CO2 and turn it into plastic. And so work that's ongoing at the moment is how can we kind of connect direct air capture, where we take CO2 from the atmosphere and we turn it into a plastic product, making that plastic almost carbon negative in some aspects. That would be kind of the next step in our journey.
Right. So there's been all this research going on and has been for decades now, but traditional plastics are still king. Do you see things shifting at any point in the near future?
This is the hardest question, Belinda. And I've chatted
yes.
to some of my mentors and some amazing academics, from with much more experience than myself, and they felt that they were on the precipice for many years, and we keep feeling that we're at the precipice, but it doesn't seem that things have changed at the rate that a lot of people expected. And I think the big driver, Belinda, is that cost is king. Petroleum-based plastics are so cheap to make, and they can be bulk made, and thin films, they know how to make these materials via their processing at the moment. When I say they, I mean companies who make them. They know how to make them at such a high rate, and they're so damn cheap that it just is so difficult to break into this market with a good bioplastic. So that's the first part. I would also say kind of the second part is the sheer breadth of what a bioplastic is and that struggle. You know, I talked to you at the start about how variable that is for a consumer, and then for a recycler or a composter, it is very difficult for them then to understand what to do with each material. As a researcher in this space, I live this daily, but it's very different for everyone else in the world for this area. So what we've struggled with is a lack of government regulation in this space. And because there's been a lack of regulation, there's been a lot of variability in products and in quality. And that's led to a lot of issues for the recyclers and the composters, which then feeds back into complaints to the government. So what we've seen is a real struggle to understand how we can properly use these materials. I think one of the big things that's being focused on at the moment is recycling of petroleum soft plastics. Okay, so everyone is saying, we can do it. We know we can do it. Let's find a way to do it. And so everyone's focusing on polyethylene, LDPE.
That's the kind of plastic you'd find in something like cling film.
And people are saying, we can do it. We can recycle it. And that's fantastic. But the rates of recycling are so low. Recycling soft plastics right now, Belinda, is not economically viable on a large scale. Right now, just to recycle hard plastics, we have to separate them all out, and we can only put them in the same mechanical recycler for the same polymer. And we can only do that a certain amount of time. So this is also a bit of a thing in recycling. Unfortunately, recycled plastics, you can only recycle them 6-7 times, some studies suggest, before they completely deteriorate. And every single bit of contamination, every bit of protein, every bit of fat, every bit of meat that touches that plastic, unfortunately, if that's not properly washed off, it's going to deteriorate the polymer overall. And so we're at this space right now where there's a problem with the waste side, and we don't have a proper way to do it. We're trying to recycle LDPE, but that doesn't include all the other soft plastics. And we're trying to get bioplastics in the market, but we're now also having issues when it comes to what type of plastics and how they're recycled. Are they industrially composted? Are they not? And so these two combination of things has made it quite difficult in the market for bioplastics to get, I think, where they need to go. And my firm belief is that all soft plastics should be designed for end of life. So all soft plastics, in my belief, should be either composted industrially or at home. I think hard plastics make sense to recycle, but I still believe, and from all the literature I've read, that soft plastics, it just doesn't make sense.
That was Eddie Attenborough, a chemical engineer and chemist at Monash University. His study into bacteria-generated bioplastics was published in the journal Microbial Cell Factories. And thank you for listening to Lab Notes on ABC Radio National, where every week we dissect the science behind new discoveries and current events. I'm Belinda Smith. This episode was made on the lands of the Wurundjeri and Tungurung people. Rebecca McLaren's the producer. We'll catch you next week.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.